All right, we are live here with a Schloss rant from the Philadelphia suburbs. The Chiefs and Bills game has just ended about 15, 20 minutes ago, whatever it is. Going to break that down. We're going to talk about, we don't have the picks to talk about because I didn't make those picks here on the podcast, but we'll talk about the ones that I gave out on Twitter. And I meant to jump on yesterday and do the picks, but you know, out there playing golf, you get a December like this here in the Northeast. You get out there and you hit some, you know, you hit the golf course and you get home. It's dark, gets a little tired after being out on the course when you haven't been out in a while. So no picks yesterday. We did give them out on Twitter and everyone should be following me there at @Schloss_sports. And the picks, quite frankly, there were horrible. Just as bad as last week. We're sitting at 1-2 with these picks. Ravens -7.5, they won but didn't cover. Panthers +6. For some reason, 3 weeks in a row, I picked the Panthers. They've let me down 2 out of those 3 weeks. They don't cover. Bengals laying the 2.5. That was a great pick. They blew them out. They blew the Colts out. Packers laying the 6.5 tomorrow. And Dolphins laying the 13 tomorrow. For some reason, 2 Monday night games tomorrow. Just, you know, not really making all that much sense to me. There's been a couple of random weeks besides the opening week in which there has been 2 Monday night games. So something to watch there tomorrow. And of course, I'm picking against the Giants. Packers team is, you know, rolling. Beat the Chiefs last week, although the Chiefs now with 2 straight losses. And the Dolphins, they beat up on all these bad teams. They beat up on the Giants. They beat up on Carolina. So that's just kind of what they do. So we're going tomorrow with the Dolphins laying the 13. And again, I'm not scared, and I haven't been scared all season of laying these big numbers. Laid it even with the Chiefs before they came through. We've laid it with San Francisco before they've come through. So I'm okay to lay the big number. Maybe both of these hit. Maybe we go to 3-2. But for the Sunday portion of these picks, just abominable to go 1-2. Not 0-3. Not a total disaster. Winning week still on the table. And we've only had 3 losing weeks. But 2 picks tomorrow definitely still on the table. All right, I'm going to touch on the Chiefs game. Then we're going to talk about baseball because Soto is a Yankee and, of course, the Ohtani situation there. And we'll also swing back around, talk about some LIV golf and Jon Rahm and kind of give you a couple of thoughts on the PGA Tour and LIV. All right, so the Chiefs. This Chiefs team, and I'm not the only one to say this, this Chiefs team is absolutely 100% struggling right now. They've lost 2 games in a row. The wide receivers are absolutely killing them. You have that play at the end of the game with about 1:15 left. Kelce makes the great catch and has it in him to lateral the ball to Tony, who scores a touchdown, but Tony is offside. Kadarius Tony. This guy is a goofball. He's a clown. He helped you win a Super Bowl, sure, if you're Kansas City with the big touchdown on the big punt return last year against the Eagles in the Super Bowl. But if I'm Andy Reid, I get Taylor Swift security and I cut him and I send him packing. This guy has killed you in 2 games this year. Killed you. He drops a ball week 1 against Detroit. They should have won. He lines up offsides after he was the one to cross the ball or cross the goal line with the touchdown from the Kelce lateral. But this guy is just, he's killing you. He's destroying you. He can't be on your team. Anyone's got to be better than him. There's got to be someone, anyone out there better than him to put on the field, put on the team if you're Kansas City. You can't have this guy. If you're the Chiefs and you were able to win this game, you'd be at 9-4. You'd be keeping pace, you know, only a game behind Baltimore. Now, all of a sudden, you got Denver, who's 7-6. You're 8-5. This is all of a sudden like a close divisional race. This is much closer than we thought. Who would ever thought the Broncos, after they let up 70 points to the Dolphins early in the year, that they'd be right in the thick of things, 1 game behind in the division. And they split the series so far in the year, the 2 game set. I'm talking baseball here, not baseball in my mind. But they split the 2 games. So it's not like Kansas City has 2 games on top of them and they definitely got the tiebreaker. But all of a sudden, you got Denver breathing down your neck, only a game back of your Kansas City, and they got to straighten things out. Now, the big takeaway from the Buffalo Bills is that this was a game they needed to have. Could they have run the table and won four straight games after this? Yeah, of course. But this is a big-time regular season win for Josh Allen. He went in there. They came out hot, up 14-0 early. He was running the ball right away, not scared to take off and run. Rushes for 32 yards. We'll get to that in a minute because you know that that's got to come into play. You know, Cook was involved in the game. He threw him the ball. He ran the ball nicely. And that's all they needed, 20 points. They scored 14 right away, right early in the game. You get some field goals in the mix too. And overall, just a solid job by Buffalo to keep Mahomes and Kelce in check, even though they almost pull off an absolute miracle in the game. If I'm Kansas City's defense, I'm mad because they contained Josh Allen and the mighty Buffalo Bills, and I know they were 6-6, but they kept them at 20 points, less than three touchdowns with the extra points. And you don't win the game because you have poor execution from the wide receivers not knowing how to line up on sides at the end of the game there. So, just, I mean, kind of ridiculous if you're Kansas City that you're losing the game. And Mahomes, this was probably the first time, this is all over Twitter, multiple people have posted this, Mahomes slamming his helmet, cursing left and right. I've never seen this guy not composed. I've never seen this guy so upset and frustrated, and rightfully so. It's almost like, all right, they win the Super Bowl without Tyreek Hill. They think they can do anything, and that's just simply not the case. These wide receivers, they're just holding them back. They're absolutely holding them back here. You can have Travis Kelce. You can have Rishe Rice, who's really a possession guy, and he's a rookie. You can't expect the world from him. But the rest of these receivers, they are just absolutely holding this team back. And this is going to be the reason why they're not going to probably win the Super Bowl again. I mean, think about it. Baltimore, they're clicking on all cylinders. Lamar Jackson putting up 30-plus points. I know they had a punt return touchdown. And I was lucky there to stay in my survivor that I picked them. It was a survivor that started in week 9, so it's not one of these season-long ones. But win is a win there in survivor. Miami's got the explosive offense. So what does Kansas City do well offensively? I know they do well defensively, but I don't think they do very much well offensively. So just, you know, kind of ridiculous there for if you're a Kansas City Chiefs fan that that's what happens. You get this dramatic touchdown and it gets taken off of the board. All right, now I mentioned the Josh Allen 32 yards rushing. I didn't give this out anywhere. This was kind of just something I fired up when I was bored walking the dogs. I put in a same game parlay, and I'm not a big fan of these, and I'm definitely not a huge fan of the prop bets. But I put it in with Josh Allen to throw an interception and rush for over 32.5 yards. Now, he's sitting on 34 yards, and when Kansas City doesn't convert and isn't able to set themselves up for a field goal to tie the game, get the ball back, what do? They take a knee. He ends up getting 32 rushing yards when I'm need him to be over 32.5. Did I shop this around? Did I look in other places? No, I put it up in DraftKings. This was something I put out when I was bored walking the dogs right before the window of rain here in the Northeast. I mean, just unbelievable luck. I need over 32.5. He's got 34. Kansas City gets a touchdown taken off the board. And if they got that touchdown, they're going to go down swinging and trying to throw the ball. And there's no need for him to, take a knee because either they win it or if Kansas City even kicked a field goal, they go to overtime and he's not going to take a knee. Just unbelievably bad luck. Unbelievably bad luck there. Talk about a bad beat. I mean, if you played that combination in any way, shape, or form, that's got to be on that Scott Van Pelt bad beat segment. Lose by a half a yard because the guy takes a knee. And I know there was a similar situation with Mahomes, I believe, in the Super Bowl that they won against the 49ers. So these things do happen. And, it was just a little amount that we had riding on this. It was a couple of bucks. But just to be fun and try to be right here, throws the interception early. You're like, all right, I'm in good shape. He comes out running early. I think he had like 26 or 27 rushing yards in the first half. Didn't really do much rushing in the second half, and then he gets over, and then takes a knee. So just an absolutely bad beat from that standpoint. All right, now, let's talk about the baseball. So we're going to transition away from football. We've got two more picks on the docket, like I said, for tomorrow. Dolphins laying the 13, and we also have the Packers laying 6.5. It might have gone up to 7, but we put it in at 6.5 earlier today, and this is all on Twitter. 1-2 on the week. Not a good week so far. Leaves us at 43-23-2 under that two-thirds mark on the season, but pretty darn good overall if you've been following my picks. And again, we didn't do the podcast last night to document it, but they're at Schloss_sports on Twitter when we're not able to get on the podcast and give out the picks. Now, let's switch to a little more of a positive tone of voice. I'm going to take off my analyst cap here for a second, my prediction cap. I love that Juan Soto was on the New York Yankees. This is the move that this team 130% needed to make. You talk about needing lefties. He fits that. You talk about being a young guy, not bringing in a superstar over his prime, a la Josh Donaldson. He fits that. You talk about a guy who doesn't always strike out. Does he strike out a little? Yeah, he does. He fits that. You talk about a guy that gets on base. He fits that. This is an unbelievable move by the Yankees. And you have to assume they know that they're going to have it in their budget to be able to keep him. And honestly, even if they're not able to keep him, am I going to be disappointed? Yeah, of course. But it's not like they gave up a whole heck of a lot. They didn't give up Jason Dominguez, who showed serious pop when he was up before the injury. They didn't give up Anthony Volpe, a 2020 guy in his rookie year. You don't love the batting average and the on-base percentage, but that'll improve over time. They didn't give up other guys on the team. What's his name? Everson or whatever. And I'm not going to pretend to know all these guys' names. But the other guy that was up in the year when Dominguez was up, they didn't give up that guy. Now, the reason I'm so pumped about Soto is if you pull up his similarity scores, okay, through age 24, I got here. I know he's 25. But you got guys like this, Bryce Harper, Frank Robinson, Andrew Jones, his teammate now, Giancarlo Stanton, Trout, Griffey, Juan Gonzalez, the guy who won the MVP with the Texas Rangers, Orlando Cepeda, who's a Hall of Famer, Miguel Cabrera, he'll be in the Hall of Fame, Eddie Matthews. So that's just amazing that you're able to get a guy like that who's young. He's still in his prime. He's got, probably 8 more years in his prime, give or take. This is a guy who I saw in 2019. Yeah, everyone watched him in the World Series. I saw this guy play twice in 3 days. He looked different than everyone else on the field in 2019. I was out there in Phoenix, Arizona, the partial D-back season tickets. Where did I sit? 9 rows off the field in between first base and right field. So I saw Soto out there a lot, hit a home run. That ball off the bat, it sounded different. This is a guy I've had in fantasy baseball. I've been a big-time fan of him. You know, he's not going to get you that 490 on-base percentage like he did during the COVID year. I think that's unreasonable, but I think he's going to have an OPS around 950. I think he's going to have an on-base percentage, 410, 420. Leave him to slug, around 520, 530, 540. He's going to hit probably 35, 40 home runs easy. He had a down year this year, and he hit over 35 home runs and knocked in over 100 runs. I don't think he's going to hit 300, but I think he'll hit 270, which nowadays is a pretty good average. This was a no doubt about it move. Now, the bigger concern with the Yankees is the roster construction, in that you've got now Aaron Judge needing to slide over to play center field. I got news for you. Aaron Judge is actually a better defensive center fielder than right fielder. I'm not going to get into all the metrics, but go look it up. He grades out better as a center fielder than a right fielder. Do you worry about him being such a big man, so many steps out there covering center field? Because right field, of course, with the short porch, not as much ground to cover, and center field is pretty expansive. Yankee Stadium, I believe it goes out to 408. Versus just 314 in right. So am I a little worried about, a toll in center field? Yeah, but I think you can rotate it where you get Judge looks at right field. You get him some looks in center field. Soto, I think, can probably play both corners. You work it in where Trent Grisham, the guy who's coming over with him from the Padres, he can go out there and play some center field, get one of those guys to DH, and I think you're good to go. And Stanton maybe can play the field every now and again. And Stanton hits better for the most part when he plays the outfield. If Stanton's able to come back healthy, and he was called out by the GM this offseason, that's one heck of an outfield, if assuming all three of them play the same outfield at the same time. You know, you go Stanton maybe in left, Soto in right, and then Judge in center. So that's an amazing outfield possibility. Now, let's move on to Ohtani, because I'm real pumped about Soto. I like this move. Love this move. Ohtani, and I know I'm coughing a little bit here. With Ohtani, you're paying him essentially 35 and 35. What do I mean? $35 million a year to be a hitter, $35 million to be a pitcher. I don't love this amount of money. It's not that the Dodgers aren't going to make it up and all types of revenue streams and the Asian market. I just think that I don't think within the next 2 or 3 years, and he's going to sit out next year pitching, I think he'll be down to a relief pitcher. I don't think he's going to be able to start. I think two Tommy Johns, I think it's tough to, you know, do your conditioning for your hitting, build up your strength in those areas, and then go out there and pitch. I think he'll maybe be a relief pitcher, be able to be a spot starter, but I don't see him being able to be the elite starter. He's a really good hitter. I don't think he's as good as Soto or Judge or even his teammate Mookie Betts, but he's a guy who hits for a lot of power. He's not the best average hitter, but he's pretty darn good. He's going to probably hit you 260, 265. So the Dodgers kind of were in a position where if you go back and connect the dots, they cut all this payroll, you know, not bringing back Seager a couple of years ago before 2022, not bringing back Justin Turner, letting go of Scherzer and Trey Turner after they traded for them. So it kind of makes sense that they didn't add all this payroll because they wanted to have room for Ohtani. Do I think the price was a little high? Yeah, because again, I just don't see him pitching in a couple of years at the level he's been able to pitch. After these two Tommy John surgery, I think he'll be more of a relief pitcher, which is still valuable. Relievers help you win World Series, no doubt. But I think for that amount of money, I think it's just going to be a lot of money to give to one guy. And what you have to worry about also, yeah, his injuries have mostly been upper body, which has kept him off the mound. What if there's a lower body injury? What if he pulls a quad? What if he pulls a hammy? Those are tricky injuries to come back from. So from that sheer amount of money, I don't love it. And I can't imagine if there was a guy, let's just say Garrett Cole, to go back 4 years ago, Garrett Cole was going to have Tommy John surgery and be unable to pitch. Is he really getting $35 million for that first year? No, they'd probably stack it, give him, you know, maybe $10 million to rehab, $35 the next year, you know, two-year, $45 million deal. Two-year, $45 million a year and say, prove it after, you know, give you money to rehab. We'll give you 1 year to prove it. We know you're a great pitcher, as Ohtani is. So essentially, if you're dividing his hitting and his pitching, to go out there and say you're going to pitch 10 years, $350 million, where he's not going to pitch the first one, it's a big risk. All right, Schloss Rant live, Philadelphia suburbs. We'll get to John Rahm perhaps at a later date because I really think the PGA Tour needs to be examined and how much longer they're going to be able to be around if Rahm's going to go for this amount of money. So Schloss Rant, we'll end it on that live from the Philadelphia suburbs. We'll see you later, everyone.